online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump delivered a video message to the 46th annual March for Life here in Washington earlier today. Vice President Mike Pence and his wife were among those on hand for the gathering, and the crowd then working its way up to the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court, voicing their support for the unborn and their opposition to legal abortion. President Trump accusing his former personal attorney of lying to reduce his own jail time. That's after BuzzFeed News published a report saying that the president had asked his ex-fixer Michael Cohen to lie to Congress in 2017. High-level talks in Washington today are meant to pave the way for a second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo meeting with a high-ranking North Korean official. Stocks in the U.S. and Europe surging today as renewed hopes for progress in trade talks between the U.S. and China contribute to the market's newfound optimism. This is SRN News.
Mostly cloudy today, but no rain. Our high will be 73. This evening, mostly cloudy with an overnight low of 52. And for tomorrow, cloudy with only a 1 in 10 chance of rain. Warmer weather, the high Saturday will be 78 degrees.
Good afternoon and welcome to SWAT Radio. You're listening to Doug McCary. Brad Sykes is not here today. He is on the road, so it'll just be me and my special guest. And I am really excited about having this guest on because he has been a great influence in my life in so many ways. And I am looking forward to having him. In fact, I don't even want to wait any longer. We are welcoming Pastor Tommy Nelson. But he ought to be a doctor because he's helped so many people along the way over the last, 30, 40 years. Tommy, welcome to SWAT Radio. How are you?
It is great to be with you, Doug. Bring it on.
Yep. I was thinking about the first time I ever stepped into your men's group, and you know, one of my desires was to be able to do what you're doing, and God has blessed us with SWAT here, which is Spiritual Warriors Advancing Truth. And you were a warrior. You were a warrior before you ever went into ministry. You were a warrior on the football field. You played quarterback, didn't you?
I played quarterback for a losing team, and you better be a warrior. When you're getting beat up, my friend. In 1969, there was no rules to protect anybody.
Did you guys have face masks back then?
We did. We had face masks, and we didn't have Kevlar. We didn't have rib pads. We just went out and got after it.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed re-listening to Song of Solomon series that you put out a while back where you shared. In fact, it dates you a little bit because the series I listened to, you and your sweet wife, Teresa, had been married 17 years, and now you've been married how long?
Let's see, 41, I believe.
41. So yeah. You made that recording 24 years ago, but you know what, Tommy? It's still relevant. It's so relevant.
Shelf life, and I'll tell you why, because it's an exposition of the Bible. It's not really what Tommy thinks about marriage, love, sex, and whatever. It is the Song of Solomon, verse by verse, paragraph by paragraph, chapter by chapter, and so that's why you can listen to it for now in the video, you know, the hair changes.
Yeah, that happens, doesn't it?
It was a little bigger in 1990-something, but it's all the same.
Well, and you have been the senior pastor out at Denton Bible Church. How long have you been pastoring that church, Tom?
Well, whatever 77 is from 2019.
Gosh, is that 50 years almost?
Almost. It's 40. I think it's 47 years.
Yeah, almost 50 years. Almost 50 years you've been pastoring, and you've been a faithful pastor out there. It hadn't gone without its bumps, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But you are coming to town next week to visit us here in Jacksonville to be a part of the Pastors Conference, and that Jacksonville Pastors Conference down at First Baptist Church, and you will be speaking on Friday afternoon at 3:30, and there are a host of good God-fearing preachers who will bring the truth. And what will you be sharing down there? Will you be sharing about your experience, or will you be teaching a particular topic?
You know, I like to teach a particular text. I think that pastors love to come and just be ministered to in the Word. And so I think I'm going to take 2 Corinthians 2. We are an aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. Mm-hmm. The one, an aroma from life to life, the other from death to death. And who is adequate for these things? Mm-hmm. We are not like many peddling the word of truth.
And boy, that's happening today, isn't it? The peddling of the word?
You know, you're not to be a peddler where you're trying to do whatever you can to make a sale. Our job is to speak of Christ clearly and take the hit. That's our job.
And we are going to be taking hits, because I don't know if you saw CNN came out and said they were referring to stuff being taught at a Christian school in Virginia, because Karen Pence, the vice president's wife, used to teach there. And CNN came out and said basically that the biblical morality is disgusting. And did you hear that? Yeah. That just came out.
No, that sounds about like our day. The Bible says when unrighteousness is elevated among men, sin struts on every side. That when there's no sense of accountability and of God, sin struts. It's like Goliath out saying, "You send me these dogs with sticks. Is that all that I am?" And so you... sin struts, and now you're not afraid to say biblical morality is disgusting. So man becomes as disgusting as he can be the less and less of God and his word that is proclaimed.
Yeah, well, it's so funny that now we're in a post-Christian culture, and religious liberty means basically you can believe what you want, but you can't say somebody else needs to believe that anymore. They've changed their definition of tolerance. I am so excited you're going to be here teaching to these young pastors and the people that will be attending. And I just want to remind our listeners, it's next week. It'll be Thursday, January 24th through the weekend, and they've got a host of good guys, but Tommy will be there. And Tommy, I really appreciate you being willing, because I know you do not take a lot of speaking engagements outside because of what you were doing there. Are you still doing Young Guns out there?
Yeah, we still get about 20 guys a year, 15, 20 guys a year, put them through about 500 hours of Bible and ministry, and get them ready for seminary or pastoring or being Christian businessmen or missionaries or wherever God takes them. But we take them through through Bible and theology and church history.
Well, I know that has been something near and dear to your heart over the years. You model that discipleship mentality, and you had a heart for it, not only for the young men, but also just all men. And you were doing two or three studies a week with men, weren't you?
Oh, I was doing 13 a week. And I ran out of gas.
Yeah.
And I had to cut back. But still, every pastor always wants to, on Sunday morning, you teach and you form your critical mass of people, and you separate truth from error, sin from righteousness, the eternal from the temporal. And that's your job, is to separate. But you got to get this, like moonshine, and you can heat up that mash, but you got to get the alcohol out of it. You got to distill it, separate it. And so during the week, you have to have discipleship, small groups, observable, with a intentional curriculum where work is observed, and when it's over, the faithful are awarded with leadership. That is what discipleship is. And so we do that during the week, and we're able to skim off. Probably 80% of your church doesn't care whether they're discipled or not. They just want you to preach when they happen to be there, bury their loved ones, marry their children, visit them when they got cancer, but don't push them any further. 20% of your church is going to leave your church if they don't get a chance to replicate and to preach and to carry on and disciple. They will head someplace else. And so you have to be able to have studies in your church that not everybody can do, so that the achievers can reach out. And so that's what we make sure that we do.
Well, I am so glad that you did that, because I am a beneficiary of being out there and actually going through some of that when those times you were teaching the men, and it really impacted me. And I was impacted by, one, the exposition, and two, just the fact that you were fairly authentic, which is hard to see today in the culture that we live in, because people are afraid to be authentic with guys. And, right. You know, you and I were talking, by the way, thank you for your book. I just got it 2 days ago, and I've started reading it, and it is very helpful. And that is really what I want to spend the rest of our time on today. Is you wrote this book with a guy named Steve Levitt called Walking on Water, When You Feel Like You're Drowning, Finding Hope in Life's Darkest Moments. And you and I were having a conversation a few weeks ago, and I was sharing with you how I kind of felt like I was drowning a little bit a couple of months ago. Right. And we got to talking about it, and I want to set a little bit of a context. We talked a little bit about your football. You were a very driven guy, weren't you, Tommy?
Yeah, I've never, ever been not focused. One of the best things that happened to me were our parents, and let it be known that your youthful years are not for amusements. Your youthful years are to prepare you for future greatness. And so I didn't spend my youth being amusing. I was always purposeful. For me, it was football, and so I was totally committed to football. And the problem was that the success didn't satisfy, and defeat didn't, you know, I couldn't come back from it, because if you won, you had to come back and do it every single week. And it didn't give you any ultimate meaning. And so I just bottomed out. And when Christ made himself known to me, that's when I found out this is worth my life. This is worth a total commitment, is to the person, the truth, and the ministry of the Lord Jesus Christ. And anything less than that is an insult to humanity. And so I was always driven for what I felt was going to make my life significant.
And you were having a significant impact with Song of Solomon, probably one of the best teachings on that book I've ever heard. Yep. God was blessing that. You were doing conferences. You had all these men's studies. Denton Bible was growing. You had a great ministry to the students of North Texas. But then something happened, right? I mean, you kind of crashed.
I started noticing that I'd get to where I couldn't sleep. And then I would get at times to where I could literally feel my legs crackling with energy. And it just grew and grew. And I didn't know what it was. We thought it might have been allergies. And then one day when I was preaching, and you got to remember, I'm teaching usually about 13 times a week. And teaching the Song of Solomon, and now I'm also writing, and I'm doing curriculums, and
And you were on the board at Dallas Theological, too, weren't you?
I was on the board at Dallas Seminary. And the only reason I did 13 times a week is that I couldn't do 15, is that I was committed, and I would go to bed at 10:30, I'd be up at 5 latest, and I was just zealous. I had two boys that were, you know, out and heading off. And so I'm hitting it hard. And it got to where all of a sudden one Sunday night, I just ran out of energy completely. My body just crashed, and my heart rate accelerated and sweating bullets. And I didn't know why. And it went away. And slowly and surely, long story short, it went from a physical abnormality to a emotional, call it spiritual, whatever, soulish, bottom dropped out. And I found myself in a clinical depression and anxiety and clinical anxiety. And if you don't know what it is, you've never had it. If you have been there, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because it affects 40 million Americans. And so it hit me, and I didn't know what it was. And so it was about a, May, June, July. It was about a four-month journey to slowly and surely work through that. And in that time, God and I became close in a way that we had never been before, as he took me from day by day through that. And so I came out of it. I received the proper, you know, medication to something to get your body back on an even keel. And then you have to alter generally your schedule that you're doing. And then you, just take life after. And I found out I had to take it, work a lot smarter, but work a lot easier and go for the long haul. And so I'm happier right now than I've ever been in ministry, but I had to cut back to about four times a week that I teach, mm-hmm. as opposed to 13 times. And I don't travel near as much. Traveling is extremely stressful.
It is, because I travel quite a bit, probably as much as you were when you were doing all the Song of Solomon. But yeah. But when did you realize that you really had a problem? I'm not talking about the problem that you were talking about where you were anxious. I'm talking about what were the actual symptoms of the clinical depression part? How did you move from where you were initially feeling some? Did you try to power through it all?
Yeah, I'd say if I can go out and run, I'll just run it out. And you try, because you're not sure what it is, and you're just trying to power through it. But when it has got you in its throes, I canceled a major conference on like a Thursday when the conference started on Friday. And I have never missed a speaking engagement in my life. I've never canceled one in my life unless I was just dead. But this one I canceled because I knew that I could not get up physically and speak, because I could not concentrate on what I was doing. And it was just it was like being in the belly of the beast. Mm-hmm. It was Jonah over the boat. And so I just didn't know what to do. And that's the biggest problem people have when they hit it. They don't know who to go to, because if you go to if you do an MRI, if you do an X-ray, if you do a physical, they'll always tell you, like they told me, you're in perfect health. Your blood pressure is a little up, but you're in perfect health. But I knew that I wasn't. And so you're just desperately hoping that they'll find a tumor on you, or they'll find a cancer, or they'll find something that you can at least name, but you don't know what it is. And until somebody who knows what they're doing gets on top of it. I remember I had a woman at the Cooper Clinic in Dallas. I went for a physical. She said, you're perfectly healthy. And she said, I think what you're having is classic clinical anxiety, and you might need to start on a regimen of just Xanax. And I remember I said to her, I am not a sophomore girl.
Oh, my God.
And she should have hit me and slapped me out of the chair. Yeah. But that was the way I was thinking. And then later on, I went to, I had another a physical, and they said, you are perfectly healthy. And I went to a guy in Dallas at the one of the top internists, and he said, the woman was right. You are classic clinical anxiety. You simply have run on adrenaline so long that the byproduct of adrenaline is cortisol, and that has shut down the neurotransmitters in your brain, known as serotonin and the like, and you have the feeling that you are in a hole and mm-hmm. can't get out of it. And you're going to have to change your regimen. And he looked at me and said, what's your schedule? I gave it to him, and he said, good night. He said, I'm anxious talking to you.
Yeah.
He said, you have four jobs. Nobody can do that. He said, in the military, this is known as PTSD. Mm-hmm. It's post-traumatic stress syndrome. It's when you get old and you can't get out of it. And he said, you're going to have to shut down, and that's not going to help, because your body's got to build back. And there are some things that you can take to let your body help to build back. And he mentioned them, and he said, you're not sleeping. I said, no, I can't sleep. I feel like Like I've been stopped by a Georgia Highway Patrol guy, and he's walking. I see him in the rear view coming up on me. The way I feel all the time. And he said, well, you're going to have to get something to sleep. You're going to have to cut your schedule, and you're going to have to take something and start to level out your serotonin again. And, of course, when you're going through this and somebody tells you to take anything, you will take it because you have wasted all of your hopes on everything because nothing will help it. And I guess I would have come through it eventually, but you have to shut down. And so I just shut everything down, and it took me about 4 months. I began taking what is called an SSRI, which is a serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitor. It allows your body to start to build back its serotonin. And when they gave it to me, they said nothing's going to happen for about 3.5 to 4 weeks because it's a natural buildup of your own depleted source. And so you're just going to have to wait on it. And I waited on it, and I took something where I knew I could sleep. And one day, Teresa and I, my wife, were sitting at the table eating, and I looked up, and it just lifted. And I looked at her, and I said, she said, what's wrong with you? And I said, I'm me. She said, what do you mean? I said, I'm me. It just lifted, whatever it was. It was like, you know, when you drive in the fog, on a real foggy morning, and the sun comes out, and all of a sudden it lifts. Well, that's what it was. It just kind of lifted. And then it would kind of drift back in, then drift back out. It's kind of like jumping off a car. You know, and then it gets where it needs to be. And so it took about 3 weeks, and then it began to lift. And slowly and surely, I began to get back in the swing just with preaching, and then with preaching three services, and then with starting Young Guns, where I'd cut back on it a lot. But, and then I quit traveling. And so slowly and surely I got back. And I found out, I went down to Dallas Seminary and I spoke about it like I am right here. And they recorded it and they played it. And that little 30-minute deal got, I am told, a million hits from people that had going through it themselves. And they would just type up on the computer, depression, anxiety, and it would send them to me, and they would listen to me speak, and then they would call me, and they would say, you're me, and I'm you, and I'm going through it. Help me. And I had college baseball coaches. I had professional athletes. I had, you name it, I had people calling me just saying, can you help me? What should I do? Because we're just not equipped. So I went and wrote a book, and me and my buddy Steve Levitt went and did a conference and put it on in a film, and so now everybody in time will be able to get it and get some help as to know what to do. Because when you don't think there's help and this is the new norm, that is when guys will kill themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you feel hopeless, you feel like hopeless. This. I mean, you literally feel hopeless.
Yeah, if you've got a broken leg and you can't get by to set it, you're thinking someday this thing's I'm going to get it right. But when you've got this inside of you, you can't get your hands on it. And if you think that this is the new norm, then the thoughts will come about killing yourself. And I've seen people do it.
Well, you know, the other thing, Tommy, is as a believer, you're fearful about what people are going to think. Like,
pagan will go get help. A Christian won't.
Mm-hmm.
He'll just suffer. Matter of fact, I visited with a psychiatrist. I said, educate me on this. What is this? Just tell me what it is. And he said, frankly, you don't want to tell your Christian friends that you're struggling with this. Because he said, a non-Christian will go get help. A Christian will go Job on you, like Job's buddies.
Yeah.
They all moralized it, and they said, you obviously are in sin to be this low. And Job said, I shouldn't have this happen to me because I've been good.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you must have been bad, and both of them were wrong. Sometimes it's just the sovereignty of God that you go through, and you rest. And Job never found out at the end of the book. Job never found out about Satan and the deal between him and God. He never found it out, but he had to go through it. And so he said, be careful of telling your Christian friends, because they're going to start sending you every neti pot they've ever had, that maybe if you clean your sinuses out, you'll feel better.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you'll just take B12, or maybe if you'll just do this or that, or just take this essential oil or something that's going to change, and it's not.
Or some of them may just say you need to snap out of it. You just need to memorize some scripture.
Because I had memorized 17 New Testament books, so there was nothing. Nobody could come to me and say, hey, you need to memorize scripture, because I could say which book you want. And so mine was just simply too much of a good thing, where you just flat run out of gas. If you'll remember, it happened to, Dick Vermeil.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia Eagles coach, where he couldn't get out of his car. And if you know Vermeil's schedule, Vermeil pushed himself beyond what he could stand. It happened to Coach Krasinski, Coach K, at Duke, I guess. And he had to take time and get himself back. And so, matter of fact, I remember when I went and visited with that psychiatrist in Dallas just to educate me on what this was, he said, I've got a VIP parking space in the back, where people come, and he said, you would know who they are, but they're just afraid to let it be come out that they're going through this. Pastors, I've talked with dozens of pastors that had to call me because they couldn't tell their layman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sad deal.
It is sad, and you do struggle with wondering, you know, you just wonder why. I mean, why you're feeling it, like if you've done something wrong, and I can see
what
why people...
What did I do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are whatever there is in you that lets you feel emotion. It's not that you're an emotional basket case. It's that you're a non-emotional basket case. Your mentor, I think it was Dan Rather. I may be wrong, but I think it was Dan Rather that went through it.
Wow.
And he said, if your mother dies, you don't care. If you just won the lottery and $1 billion, you don't care. You are emotionally dead.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't feeling, I don't think, to the point of where you were. I was telling you about that when we had our conversation.
Right.
The best way I know how to describe it, being a pilot, is I felt sometimes when you're flying in the clouds, you get tired of being in the clouds. You have to be on your instruments, but you start feeling this, like, this anxiety, because as pilots, we like to see the horizon. We want to know if we're up or down. And you start wondering, and guys get vertigo all the time, and they flip their plane to actually crash because they don't know which way is up, and that's how you feel. And then all of a sudden, you pop out. If you trust your instruments, you get through that. And but it's such a great feeling when you pop out of the clouds, and that sounded to me like what you were talking about when you said, I'm me.
That's exactly,
you know,
right.
You just pop out. And so,
because you do. You have vertigo. It is spiritual vertigo. You don't know what's up or down. And that's when you read your – and also you lose your ability to read during that time. You can't really maintain concentration. I couldn't watch a TV. I couldn't read. I couldn't stand loud music. I couldn't stand loud noise. And so I would just go out and work in the garden and just try to do things, or go at night, go out and just walk. And so you do get to where you just are trying to find hope in your Bible. I would read through the Psalms completely, and it's like each Psalm would just speak unto the stress I was going through, and that God was with me. And so he just took me through it.
Well, we are talking with Pastor Tommy Nelson. The book is Walking on Water, When You're Feeling Like You're Drowning. And listen, if you're struggling with depression, or you think you're struggling with depression, we want to give this resource to you. So if you will email me at doug@swatradio.com, I will get a copy of this to you. Tommy graciously gave me a copy, and it's been very helpful to me already, and I'm not even through it. I want to give you a copy. If you just email me, doug@swatradio.com, we will get you a copy of this book. And also, I just wanted to let you know, Tommy is going to be speaking. You don't have to be a pastor to go to the pastor's conference. You can just pop into the main sessions. If you go to jackspastorsconference.com, you can see the schedule. They're going to be having that next Thursday through Sunday at Jacksonville First Baptist Church, and would love for you to join us. Tommy, we're going to take a quick news break. We'll be right back. Okay. And when we come back, I want to dig a little bit into how your wife dealt with it, How can we practically help people who are going through this? And then, you know, how do we move forward with hope? How do we give people hope as we do that? Okay.
Yep.
All right. All right. So, hey, you're listening to SWAT Radio. We'll be right back after this news break.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington, and we have got breaking news this hour. As the White House says President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un will hold another summit next month.
No specific time or place was announced, but White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the U.S. and North Korea have agreed to a second summit between President Trump and leader Kim near the end of February. The announcement came following a 90-minute Oval Office meeting between the president and North Korean official Kim Jong-chol.
That is White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reporting. Thousands gathered on the National Mall for the annual March for Life.
We march. Why? Because we're marching to end the human rights abuse of today, abortion. And no sacrifice is too great for that. That's why we march.
And that's March for Life President Jeannie Mancini welcoming the crowd to the 46th annual March for Life. This woman came all the way from Nebraska.
They're the future generation. They're the artists, politicians, singers, writers, workers, mothers, fathers, and children of the future, and they're not being given a chance.
And not only all the enthusiastic faces in the crowd, but some very high-level support also. The vice president and his wife showed up in person, and President Trump appeared via video message.
This is a movement founded on love and grounded in the nobility and dignity of every human life. When we look into the eyes of a newborn child, we see the beauty and the human soul and the majesty of God's creation.
And the president said he's committed to pro-life policies in his administration, including the ban of taxpayer money to pay for abortions. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average doing well, up 281 points, about an hour from the closing bell. It's at 24,651. The NASDAQ has picked up 61 points, and the S&P 500 right now up close to 30. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Still no active accidents, but there is a disabled vehicle on the West Beltway 295 southbound before Dunn Avenue. On the north side, also a disabled vehicle on I-10 westbound before Lane Avenue. And congestion building up on the East Beltway 295 southbound and northbound around Bay Meadows Road. Sun and clouds this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low 52. Saturday, partly sunny and breezy, high 76.
Hey, it's Doug McCary. You're listening not to the Andy Griffith Show. You're listening to SWAT Radio. But I love Tommy Nelson because he likes Andy Griffith, too. And so we have our guest, Tommy Nelson. You know, there's something. I still watch that show. There's just something, even when I hear that theme, that just brings a smile to your face, doesn't it? It just, you think about that time. And
it's one of the few shows ever made that the hero of the show is Mayberry.
Yeah.
Mayberry is the maypole with the, there's always an absolute standard of love, honesty, hard work, ethic, care for the little guy. Yeah, there's always a moral virtue. And the whole town of Mayberry is a little insane. Everybody on there is crazy.
Yeah.
Except Andy is kind of like the high priest, and he mediates between truth and the crazy people. At times, Andy is a little bit crazy, but he always brings them to the truth. And it always saw, it has problems and it resolves within about 22 minutes added commercials.
Yeah.
And so that's why the show has been, there's never been a time I've been told since the 1960s that Andy of Mayberry is not on someplace.
Well, it is a great program. If you have never allowed your kids the opportunity to see that show, watch it with them. You can watch it now. You can they still run that show on TV Land, and you can watch that program. And I mean, it is still they have some great moral truths in there, and like you said, they resolve it. I love it. It's great. And I, you know, you and I, we talked about it when we were living out in Texas, and I just love the fact that you referenced it, because I thought I was one of the only ones that still liked it, man. So it was good. Well, you know, life, we're talking about with Tommy. By the way, Tommy's going to be speaking next week at the Jacksonville Pastors Conference. You can go to jackspastorsconference.com to get the schedule to register. If you want to be a part of the whole conference, if you're a pastor listening, you can go there. But even if you're not a pastor, you can just pop into the conference itself for the main speaking times. And there's going to be a host of other good pastors speaking, and Tommy will be speaking next Friday at 3:30. And we've been talking with Tommy today about this issue of depression. And Tommy, a couple of questions for you. How do you know the difference between being sad about something or clinical depression? Like, how, I'm sure that you had experienced sadness before, but this was really different. Yeah. How did you tell
clinical
the difference?
Sadness will always have a reason. When you're just sad, and so the Bible speaks of God who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus, that you, you'll always have, you know, sadness and stress and anxiety. But there's always a reason. When it becomes clinical, there is no reason. It becomes a physical thing that you can't get out of. And no matter how many good meals you have, how much your mate comes and sits on your lap and tells you you're wonderful, it doesn't matter. You're not getting out of it. And usually it will remove your ability to sleep, or in some cases it will make it to where all you can do is sleep, try to get away. You become agoraphobic. You don't want to get around people. You get to where you can't stand loud noises. You get very listless. Generally, if you get anxiety, you'll drop 20 pounds within, 6 weeks. You'll drop 20 pounds. It'll just fall off of you because it's like you're cooking on ephedra. You're just running continually in anxiety. And so it's kind of like if you don't think you've had it, you probably don't. But when you've got it, there is no doubt that something has got you.
Well, how one practical aspect, like I know in our family, you know, my wife struggled with this a while back, years ago, and I did not respond very well like I should. I mean, I loved her, but I didn't understand it. And I came from that camp that, well, you just got to get in the Word. You got to just, you know, you got to have faith. You know, you just got to believe. I repented again today to her for that, especially after I was listening to you and you know, going through your book. And so how did your wife Teresa deal with it, and how can we practically as believers help people that may let us know? First of all, if they don't let us know, how do you know we recognize the signs in others? You told us how to recognize it in yourself, but how do you recognize it in others? Is it just the pulling away, or are there other things we can look for, and then how do we respond?
Well, generally when they come in and start talking and I start asking questions about, are you able to sleep? Can you read? Are you able to watch a television program? Is it worse in the morning or the evening? Does it ever come or go? Whenever those answers are no, it doesn't come and go, it always stays. I'm not able to sleep. I don't like being around people. I've had people that had suicidal thoughts, that felt extremely alone and hopeless. And so whenever you get like that, you really need in your church a contact person, a point man that has been through it. And so, or a woman, if you send people to them, they can talk to them and tell, sometimes you'll say, no, they don't have depression. They're just, you know, down because of some of the things they've been doing that hadn't worked out. But I think they're okay. They just need to take time. But when somebody is deep in it, that a contact person can know, he can feel it. And at that point, you need somebody to give them encouragement. The question that I ask continually when it hit me, I would talk to people who had been through it, and I would say to them, tell me I'm going to go through this. Mm-hmm. Tell me there is light at the end of the tunnel. And they all said, there is light at the end of the tunnel. They'll say, I was in the fetal position, and I went through it. They'll say to me, Thomas Jefferson went through it. George Washington went through it. Martin Luther went through it. There's just all kind of people that have struggled with it. And then you try to get them to somebody that can understand medications. There's kind of a deal out there that a Christian shouldn't take medication. And yet the people that are saying don't are the same people that are on Lipitor, Flomax, and Cialis. You know? And so they're saying you shouldn't take a medication. Now, when your insulin ain't working, or your pancreas, you're going to take insulin. When your head is throbbing, you will take Tylenol. When you have an inflamed knee, you will take ibuprofen or what it takes to get rid of that. And so this, when it becomes physical, you can get something to level you out. But what you have to have is a pro, and that is all that he does. And that is a psychiatrist. And you got to remember, a psychiatrist doesn't do counseling, really. A psychiatrist looks at the medical end of it. And so a psychiatrist may, usually his appointments during a day won't be but 15 minutes because he's making sure that you're on the right dose of the right thing or the right combination of things. And so I, by God's grace, happened to find a very good fellow. I had an elder in my church that was an Indian doctor, and he talked to another Indian friend of him that happened to be a Hindu psychiatrist. And he listened to my symptoms, and he said, oh, he is garden variety. He said, I talk to him seven times a day. He's garden variety. This is who he is, and he described my personality without ever meeting me. This is what he's feeling, and he needs to take this to help him sleep and take this and wait on it 3 to 4 weeks and let it begin to build up, and it will lift. And then he's got to find the root cause, whatever got him into this. Some people, it's scheduling. And some people, Doug, it can be sin. Mm-hmm. If you're embezzling money or you're cheating on your wife, I'll assure you, you're going to have some anxiety problems. Mm-hmm. And so if you're eat up in your job and you're not really taking time to grow as a human, you're going to have some depression problems. Mm-hmm. But he'll know that this is depression. We'll need to try Zoloft, that is very, very conservative. If it's anxiety, generally we'll try Lexapro. And you won't experience when you take it. Just wait, and after about 3 weeks, sometimes when you first start, you can have kind of, I remember he said to me, for the first 6 days, you may feel at times like a menopausal woman, and I wasn't sure what that was, but I know now. He said it's a buildup of your serotonin. You'll have a serotonin rush, and you'll feel like you get a little hot flash, and he said, you're okay. He said, that's your serotonin building back. And so you just need somebody in your community that's a doctor or a psychiatrist that really understands what he's doing and can help direct you in getting the right medication.
Now your co-author, Steve Levitt, is a DTS guy. Now,
right.
He sat under your ministry there too, right?
Right.
Y'all had a relationship.
The first young guns that I have, I'm looking at his picture right now on the wall. I had the first young guns I had. In 1990, Steve was one of my guys. He got married to a dear girl, and then she got cancer and died and laid off of any chemo so the child could be born.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost her, and it plunged him into a depression. He realized he had struggled with it for all of his life on and on, wasn't sure what it was. And Steve, who went through it, now has a ministry called Hope for Life. And people can call him instead of scheduling an appointment, trying to get to a doctor. They can call him and get pretty well instant help on just answering their questions because he's been through it himself. And so he does full time what I do part time. Because once you go through it, you're going to become a priest, and you're going to mediate for people who are in it and help point them to the right places. And so that's kind of what I do now.
But isn't that what we're supposed to do, right? As we experience these things, we then become the priest to help others navigate through that. Isn't that right? I mean,
the Apostle Paul. Paul said, God comforts us in all our afflictions so that we might comfort those in any affliction with the comfort by which we ourselves were comforted by God. Mm. And so we go through stuff so we can help those who follow.
Well, his ministry website is hopeforlifeministry.com, and you can go to that site. They have audio downloads, and he not only talks about depression, he also deals with marriage and parenting and does marriage retreats. So that's hopeforministry.com, and I can assure you, if he's a young gun, he's Tommy Nelson trained, and
he knows his stuff, and he's been through Dallas Seminary, and he knows his stuff.
Yeah,
and he's quite a guy, and he's been there.
Yeah, he's just from reading what he shared in the book so far was really good. Well, Tommy, just from a spiritual aspect, what pointers or markers did the Lord surface as you went through this for you?
It's one of those deals that you say, I'll never want to go through it again, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it was it builds in you a great sense of compassion. You know, that the Bible says the poor man offers supplication and the rich man answers roughly. But a lot of times we'll treat people according to how we perceive just whether they're worth it or not. And it'll take that away from you. You once you go through that, you see yourself as an afflicted individual, and you wonder if you're not going to be just over at the Kroger following your wife and the shopping cart around, just trying to go day by day. And so it will humble you, and it will give you a compassion when you see people that you think are struggling with it. Probably a lot of the people that we have that are homeless are people that have some kind of mental disorder. A lot of them are. And it gives you a compassion. You will no longer answer roughly to hurting people. You know, if you've been to a doctor's office and you get a receptionist that's just kind of worn out and just kind of gives you a look and says, now, what do you want? You know, it makes you feel really bad. And so when you're going through this and you say, hey, I can't do this, and I am depressed, and somebody snaps at you and says, well, you just need to trust God and get rid and confess the sins you're having and start anew. And that's not what you need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody that can put their hands on you and say, you know, I'm here, and I'm going to – let's see if we can work through this together, and let's get some help to come in here with us. So it'll make you a compassionate person, and it will make you a person – that starts to delight in simple joys. All I thought of when I went through what I was going through was to be able to go to the minor league park and watch my boy who was playing for the Cardinals, and to be able to sit in the stands behind the third base dugout and to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game and have a corny dog and a Dr. Pepper. That was all that I thought about, was that simplicity. Or sitting with my grandchildren and just talking to them and laughing with them. Or just sitting out in my backyard where I have a brick fireplace built and just propping my feet and reading Bible and other good books and just having my feet up by the fire. Those are the things that you learn to see as precious. They're not all the, you know, the ambitious things, but the pensive things. Incidentally, Doug, the psychiatrist told me, he said that Americans lead the world in coffee and in hard liquor. He said, we got to have coffee to get us going and liquor to put us down.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we are the most motivated group of people in the history of the world, because American isn't the feudal system where you're born into who you are. You've got to make who you are. And so you work hard to get there. And once you get there, you don't stay there. You can lose it. You got to fight to stay there. And we grade an American a lot of times on his social position, what he owns, what he makes, where he lives. And when that becomes the standard, it becomes the thing that you cultivate. Mm-hmm. And so you can go from England over to America, and you can feel America when you land your plane. We move fast. We're watching the clock. We don't tolerate losing. We almost like to see big guys fall.
Mm-hmm.
Makes us feel better. We're the original rags to riches people. We are the capitalist, the materialist, the industrialist. We love to hang stuff on our walls, our degrees, and our big horn sheep that we've killed. And so America is the most motivated. The American dream is the essence of ambition. And we're running fast in this country. And so we mass produce depression and anxiety.
Well, and then you throw in social media and what's happening with our kids today.
Social media, you know, nobody wants to go through high school again, or junior high again. And the reason we made it through is at 3:30 we could leave and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with social media, you can't go home now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can imagine when you were in high school, if somebody wrote up on the bathroom wall that you were this or that, and people started spreading it around. I remember there was a girl in our high school that it was found out that on a date she had performed oral sex with a fellow. And it got talked around our high school until she attempted suicide because she could not get away. Well, now that event, that singular event, is commonplace on cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start circulating, human chatter is the lowest level of communication. It's like reading novels on bathroom walls, just taking pictures of bathroom walls and reading them. And social media for a kid can be crippling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally do not operate a computer machine, nor a smartphone, nor any of that stuff. I've got too much time to read quality stuff than I am to listen to chit-chat by people. And so social media can contribute greatly to a youth's depression and anxiety.
Mm. Well, I jotted down a couple of things you said, and I want to run them by you. So if you're going through this, if you are feeling in the clouds, you said it could be scheduling. You said it could be sin. It
yep.
could be sorrow from something like Steve's
yep.
case, his wife passed away. But
and a lot of times a deep pain is something you can't walk away from. The loss of a child,
mm-hmm.
your mate's having stage 4 breast cancer. And so there, it's something that's a little bit easier to work through because you can put your finger on it and it can fluctuate. But it's generally when things that are just little things that mount up. It's like getting pecked to death by a chicken, you know, when it just mounts up on you so much. That's when you can tell it.
Well, you said, and I'm trying to summarize here, that for you, it was cutting back on schedule, finding a good doctor/psychiatrist, and then also finding somebody who's gone through it. And those things were kind of what I heard you saying. But could you speak a little bit? I know you've always been a guy who exercised ever since football. You've done that. Could you speak to that and the importance of I mean, I know
Absolutely.
Some people don't want to do that. They don't feel like getting out. How important is something like exercise?
Well, there's never been a time since I was 13-year-old that I wasn't lifting weights or running. And still today, 6 times a week, I'll go to the gym and I'll lift weights and run. And that's just who I am. And doctors have told me that the runner's high, you know, that when you get running, all of a sudden you hit kind of a electroglide and you just kind of feel an elation. And they said that's not a myth, that under that stress, your body begins to release different endorphins and the like. And they said you need to, when you're going through anxiety, depression, try to go out and to walk or to get some strenuous exercise later in the day, 3, 4, 5 o'clock. Don't do it just before you go to bed, but do it 3, 4, and 5 o'clock, and it burns off adrenaline, which you're forming in that. And so if you're not exercising, I always say get out and just walk out 15 minutes, back 15 minutes. Walk out 20 minutes, then back 20 minutes. And then get to where you can walk for about 45 minutes, and you're going to find out that that you're going to sleep a lot better and life's going to be a lot better if you can do that.
Well, and the other thing you mentioned was rest as well, having to incorporate rest.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's probably a lot of type A people that struggle with this issue, right? I mean, the whole issue of depression, because we're driven.
I remember the doctor saying to me, he said, if it makes you feel any better, bums don't get this. He said, people get this that are successful people and have expectations and can be disappointed. They're the ones that will get this. Another guy said to me, moms can get this after the second kid. The first kid you can keep your hand on, but a lot of times a mother feels like her entire life has been altered. Some women feel greatly satisfied by mothering and child rearing. Other ones that had other things they did all of a sudden feel locked out. And if you're a woman with ADD, that attention deficit, you can really, with that second kid, you can't keep both those plates spinning. Mm-hmm. And they can bring about a depression. And so the psychiatrist I visit to, he will always, with women, want to know how their child rearing is, because that can really depress you.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, listen, I want to reiterate to everybody that you will be sharing next week on Friday at Jacksonville Pastors Conference down at First Baptist Church. Their conference starts on Thursday, and you will be sharing at 3:30 on Friday. If you would like to come and listen to Tommy in person, that would be the time to do it, because that probably one of the few times he's in Jacksonville, because he's always out in Denton. He's preaching at Denton Bible Church. That's his home church. He's been the senior pastor there for a lot of years. And if you're in Texas or you know anybody out in the Denton area, they got a good college out there called North Texas, and a lot of those students go to Denton Bible Church. They've had a great ministry to college students, and we've been talking to Tommy. And if you want to go learn more about Denton Bible, go to dentonbible.org. That's dentonbible.org. You can listen to past messages by Tommy there. Also, you can check out the Song of Solomon series there. You can actually order those CDs. I encourage every father to listen to those with his daughter or with his son before they start dating. It is a It's a great series. And also, another resource is Walking on Water When You Feel Like You're Drowning. It's Tommy and Nelson and Steve Levitt's book about finding hope when you're going through this. And Tommy, I really want to thank you for taking time, because I know you don't take a whole lot of, you know, different opportunities outside of what you already have because of the things we've talked about. So it means a lot to me that you would take some time to share with our listeners today all these things. And we just want to, I got one last thing for a guy listening out there. Why should he be in a group of men around the Word of God? Tell him why he should be.
Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. From the time little boys are little boys, they're looking for idols, mentors, they're looking for heroes, they're looking for posters on their wall. It's just that we generally are motivated for the wrong things. And when you don't have any spiritual posters to put on your wall, but you find guys that will hold you accountable and have expectations, that believe in you and care about you. And especially when you've got one of them there that's smarter than you are, that you can draw off of in the major issues of life. Nothing's better for a guy to be among guys, or a woman to be among women that love and that care and really won't tolerate from them anything less than their best.
Well,
that's what I need to be around.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Tommy, for sharing that. And hey, one quick question before you go. Are you an XL or double XL?
I am a double XL, my friend.
All right, I have a T-shirt for you, a SWAT T-shirt. You're a SWAT guy. Hey, thank you for joining us today. You can catch this on our podcast that will be available in about an hour on SWATradio.com. Tommy, thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
God bless you, Doug.
All right, bye-bye.
If you missed a SWAT radio broadcast this week and would like to hear any show in its entirety, then go to SWATradio.com. Click on past shows where you can listen to the broadcast. Also, if you're looking for a band of brothers that gather around God's Word to be a part of, then go to SWATradio.com and email one of our hosts, and they can get you plugged in to one of the local SWAT Bible studies. Tune in next time to explore how SWAT Radio is strengthening spiritual warriors and spreading His truth.
WTRJ, Orange Park.